Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
So day four of the ATP Finals is well underway. We've had the day session. It has featured singles between Alexander Zverev and Novak Djokovic. It has finished with a 6-4, 6-1 victory for Djokovic over Zverev. That doesn't really tell the whole story because it was a good bit closer. I'll just tell you briefly what happened. It was four games all. Zverev was serving incredibly well. I think he got 80-odd percent of first serves in. He had himself a break point. He arced a backhand lob over the head of Djokovic, and it missed by how much, Charlie Eccleshare?
A hair's breadth.
A hair's breadth, a whisker. It was about an inch out, and that was when it all turned around, wasn't it? I mean, nothing was the same ever again.
No, and it felt like it at the time, didn't it? It felt like a real opportunity missed. And then as soon as the set went, you're like, oh, God, this could get ugly.
Yeah, and then it... After that, he got broken, lost the set, and Djokovic just ran away with it. We've also got Grad Matt here. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
And we have a very, very special guest with us here on the Tennis Podcast. For the very first time, I'm delighted to say Mr. Andrei Antich is here.
Hello, that's correct.
Andrei.
Hi.
And you are from Tennis Magazine in Germany.
Yes.
Which is a great thrill for me because you and I have known each other for a long time.
Yes.
And you've been at Tennis Magazine for how long now?
Yeah, 20 years. More than 20 years.
20 years. Crikey. I imagine the game has changed a bit in that time.
A bit, yeah. This time, or that was earlier with Boris Becker, Michael Stich, Pete Sampras, all these guys. So now we have a different story.
Yeah, you do. But you do have a player there. We've just talked about Zverev. He's still alive here in the ATP Finals. We don't know yet at this stage whether he's going to be able to get through his group. We'll find that out in the final group match, which he plays against John Isner. I've wanted you on the Tennis Podcast for a long time, Andre, because we've known each other for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've just been telling us the story of how you started at Tennis Magazine. I want to get into your job a little later.
Okay.
But first of all, I want to talk to you about Alexander Zverev, who is a player, I think, that we are just sort of starting to get to know, certainly here in the UK. He's obviously had great results. He's won Masters 1000 titles. He's a top eight player in the world 2 years running. What do you make of him? What do you think of him as a person from your dealings with him so far?
Okay, first of all, we didn't have the situation with the top German player for a long, long time. I mean, Rainer Schüttler, Nicola Kiefer, Tommy Haas, they were all top 10 players, but Zverev is the first one to be twice at the season-ending tournament. So he was good last year, and now he's still good. He didn't drop in the ranking. So that is a special thing about him in Germany, of course. Germany needs a good tennis player. And, of course, we met many, many times. And I think he could be number one, maybe. And he's actually a nice guy. Sometimes it's a bit difficult with the team because he moved so quick in the rankings. So there's a lot of stuff people want from him. And even for people who are like closer to him, it's sometimes tough to get an interview.
Yeah. I imagine that when they get a little older and they're no longer juniors and they come through the ranks, it gets harder, doesn't it, I imagine?
Yeah.
We know that story. What does Germany think of Alexander Zverev? How much is he embraced? How much is he supported at the moment, do you feel?
I think there is support, but you cannot compare to Boris Becker or Michael Stich. He's a bit further away, or seems to be, because he trained in Tampa, Florida. He lives in Monte Carlo. He has, you know, the Russian origins. I think people still have to learn to get to know him a bit better. I think that is he's in the process to become more well known in Germany, but now it's he's not there where he could be with number 5 ranking or number 4 or 3 in the world. He could be let's say more accepted.
We've been talking about him throughout the week, haven't we, Charlie? Mm. We've gone to his press conference today. He's an interesting character, isn't he? He's not quite like a lot of the other young players because he doesn't feel like a young player. He feels like somebody who's arrived in... I mean, obviously he has. He's already in this company. He's in this tournament. He carries himself as if he's won slams, really, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He feels like a very established player. I think it's easy to forget how young he is. I think because... You know, he eschewed the Next Gen Finals 2 years running and he came here and it feels like he wants to be seen as one of the big boys. You know, in the way he talks, he can be quite dismissive, I think. And he spoke today very interestingly how, you know, he was asked about Ivan Lendl and whether he's strict with him, and Zverev said, no, he's not, that wouldn't work with me. So he gives off the impression of being very headstrong, knowing where he wants to go, and as if he's been on the tour for a while, not just a few years.
How do you feel that the relationship with Lendl will work? Because, as Charlie was saying, I was quite taken aback at the end of the press conference, the way he sort of said, you know, Lendl had to learn pretty quick what I'm like, otherwise it wouldn't work.
Okay.
You know, and I was quite surprised by this because our experience of Ivan Lendl is both as a player and as dealing with Andy Murray, as somebody who, well, he's the boss. You do what he says.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me as though Zverev was suggesting that isn't necessarily the case. And
yeah.
He's got to work around Zverev.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It sounds kind of weird a bit. I think Lendl and Zverev, it's an ideal combination. Because Lendl, I think everybody would agree, is one of the best, if not the best coach out there. So I think it's very good that they are together. I don't think Zverev says everything he thinks about the relationship. I wouldn't say Lendl is the boss. I don't know. The boss is probably... the person who is paying,
yeah.
But Lendl is obviously he doesn't need it. So if there will be something that they don't get along each other, Lendl would probably quit. But I don't see that. I think they can reach a lot.
Yeah. How long do you think it will take for Zverev to reach his peak from where he is right now? He was beaten pretty straightforwardly by Djokovic today.
Yeah.
He's still quite a way away from that level, isn't he?
Yeah, but Djokovic now is by far the best. And Zverev is 21 years old. He reached the quarterfinals of a Grand Slam this year in Paris. I think in the next season, at least semifinal, if not final or even more. Djokovic is so strong. I think it's a bit unfair to compare now. The first set, as you have mentioned, was it could have been the other way.
It's amazing to think when you describe the sort of Boris Becker years that we might still be almost suffering a kind of hangover from that 20-odd years on, because Michael Stich always had that, didn't he? He came along, he won Wimbledon, but he's not Boris. Yeah. That was the thing, I suppose, in the public eye. Give us an idea of what it was like to be working in German tennis and in German tennis media when Boris Becker and Steffi Graf were doing what they were doing.
I mean, when I came into my job, they were almost like it was almost the end of their careers, you know. So, but my colleagues, my older colleagues, it was like a crazy time. I mean, and this will not happen again, never. Even if Zverev will win like 10 Grand Slams, it will not happen. The society is totally different. I mean, there are so many other interests. We had, when Boris started, there were three TV channels. And now you know about the situation. So it won't be like this again. Mm. But still, there could be like a mini tennis boom. I think there is a mini boom already because you have Angelique Kerber winning Wimbledon. And if Zverev wins a Grand Slam, it's again another story because men's tennis is more important. Yeah. I hope I can say that.
Yeah, well, yes, you can say it. I know the point you're trying to make. Yeah. Angelique Kerber, incidentally, has a new coach, I believe.
Yes.
Who's that?
Rainer Schüttler. Yeah. Former, you know him.
Yeah, former Australian Open runner-up.
Right.
Himself. So yeah. Why did she separate from Wim Fissette, given that they had such a good year together?
Oh, how long is the interview? It's tough to explain, maybe a bit in short.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the short version is, I mean, the official version is they didn't get along with some issue, some topic.
Right.
And so they quit. In my opinion, Fissette was the ideal coach for Kerber. I mean, if you make a player if you make her Wimbledon champ, and then you quit, you don't understand. We don't understand. But it was about money. It was about different opinions, maybe how to plan the next season and stuff like that. So I don't want to get into that, but I think it's a bit sad. On the other hand, it will be very, very interesting to see Rainer Schüttler doing the job.
You mentioned earlier, Andre, that we will never see a sort of boom in tennis in Germany like we had with Boris.
No, that was unique.
Yeah, and you mentioned the three television channels as part of that, the way the media has changed. You run a tennis magazine. How do you keep your magazine going and relevant and successful when here we are talking on a tennis podcast, when everybody's tweeting information and writing on other social media outlets? How have you had to change much?
Okay, first, I believe in paper. I think it's nice to have something in your hand still. And second, of course, I have to go different ways. I mean, if I just bring my magazine to a shop, that is not the solution. Obviously, we don't sell at a shop. We don't sell so many copies anymore. So I have to go to like the different how you put that, like to Bavaria or to Westfalen or to other organizations, and to tell them or to make a deal with them. Okay, we have your regional tennis inside, but you also get the cover, the big tennis, because we don't just cover German tennis. We do, as you know, global tennis. So you get a package. If you, like say in Bavaria, you get the Bavarian tennis and you get the big tennis with our magazine, and we try to make it nice for everybody. So that is, I'm more maybe like a manager today than a chief editor.
You've been there a long time, and you've worked through all the different roles. What is, do you have a sort of a favorite interview that you've been able to do over the 20 years that you've been doing it? Have you been able to speak to a player that you've really been proud of an interview?
Well, actually, a lot of interviews. What was very nice, like a small story, little story, I talked to Petr Grafter in Halle-Westfalen. And it was very nice. It was like 15 minutes, maybe, very nice. And then, like, almost half a year later, he played in Melbourne semi-final against Agassi. Was it 2001?
Yeah, I think so.
And,
yep.
And there was so much pressure because they didn't have a chance for ages. And Patrick saw me. I didn't advance to him, but he saw me and said, "Hi, how are you doing?" Just before the semi-final against Agassi. I thought, such a nice guy, so down at earth, and I liked that situation.
Yeah, no, he is.
He was my favorite player growing up.
Was he?
Yeah, I love the way he played, and yeah, his whole energy and the way he volleyed and all of that. It was, yeah, he was so entertaining as a player and seemed like such a lovely guy.
Yeah, he was. He still is.
Yeah.
He still is.
Yeah.
He still plays pretty good tennis. Who do you like watching these days, Andre?
Obviously Federer. Last night, he team was not so playing so well, but I liked the touch last night. And I hope that we will see Federer next year, maybe not so often in a final, because at one time it has to go down. I mean, that is biology, but I really like to watch him.
Well, what do you think of the various political changes in the sport at the moment, and particularly team tennis, because there's been so much going on, hasn't there? Tomorrow we've had an announcement that the ATP Tennis Cup is going to be announced, and we still don't exactly know what the Davis Cup is going to look like. How does German tennis view things?
I think you probably know that Germany was against the I call it revolution or whatever.
Yeah.
And me personally, I think the people who did the new format, they didn't think it to an end, the whole story. So we have the Davis Cup now, final. Maybe it will be a fiasco. Nobody will be there because, as Alexander Zverev just said in the German part of, I think in the international as well, I'm not sure, the season is too long for a lot of players. And if you have a big tournament like the Davis Cup with 18 teams, I don't think it will work out. So they have to find another date for that.
Yeah. He was quite strong on that, wasn't he, Zverev, about the season length. And he's talked about the fact that he doesn't intend to play this thing next year. I noticed when I tweeted the quotes from Zverev's press conference that I've been tired for a couple of months. The season's too long. I can't think of any other sport that is 11 months long in a season. Yevgeny Kafelnikov immediately replied to that tweet and said this is BS. We were playing in December, and I'm fed up of hearing this stuff from the players. I looked up Yevgeny's results back in the day, and he used to play 100 matches a year, and 50 doubles matches too.
And often, and more best of five set matches as well, they had back then. Though I would say they're not necessarily the best. The fact that a lot of those players had to retire quite young suggests that wasn't necessarily the way forward. But yeah, I can see the point he's making. But also, I think a lot of players would agree with Sasha, what he's saying, that the season is very long. And tennis is almost unique in that you are expected to be in peak condition all year round. I think speaking to a lot of players, that's what they say is so challenging. Because you look at a lot of sports, you have your big events throughout the year, but you can kind of pace yourself a bit. Tennis is almost unique that week on week you have to be in peak physical condition, and that is hugely demanding.
Do you think the season's too long, Andre?
Me personally, I don't know. Actually, I mean, your point is I can see the point, and I know Rainer Schüttler in 2003. He played, I think, 103 matches. And it's possible to play. I mean, they get paid well. On the other hand, they want to be prepared for the Australian Open, and they need some time. They need some rest. Maybe the times are different because there's so much with the social media and the attention is different. So I don't know, but I can understand what Zverev is saying.
There's a slight issue as well, isn't there, of the rich getting richer, because the more successful you are, the more money in the bank, the more you can afford to manage your schedule a little bit better. And that obviously is a big advantage to players, but you can't necessarily afford to do that if you're, you know, desperately trying to get money and trying to get ranking points. And I think that's part of the reason why players are going on for longer. You look at Federer, Nadal, they cherry pick their events very cleverly.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way they've been able to have that longevity, but not everyone can do that.
Yeah, no, it is true. It's an interesting one. The other bit of news we've had today is that Agnieszka Radwańska has announced her retirement. That's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, still young.
She was 29.
Yeah.
Well, she is still 29. She hasn't died. But she has retired. I think injuries had just caught up with her. She'd had a number of injuries that had just been creaking away over the years. Memories of Agnieszka Radwańska?
Great touch. Nice to watch. She played a lot against Kerber and Petkovic, I think, the German player. So
yeah.
Good matches. Very good player.
Had to do things differently, didn't she?
She always, for me, had a bit of the Martina Hingis about her, and I really warmed to both of those players because they were never going to overpower their opponents. So they did have to rely on court craft and those sort of things. And I think that variety is really important in tennis, and that's why it always saddened me that Hingis was kind of a bit, you know, overwhelmed by some of the players. And I think that's slightly happened to Radwańska. And 29 is, you know, it's so young when we're seeing players going on, you know, through their mid-30s. But I think that trademark shot where she'd get really low and, you know, somehow retrieve the ball, that was always, you know, her signature move.
She regularly won fan favourite player of the year in the awards, and she would often come up with shots that would end up being the highlight reel, wouldn't she? She was always getting shots of the month. What memories have you got of her, Matt?
Yeah, she was an innovator, wasn't she? In an era where, as Charlie says, quite a lot of the players have quite sort of generic game styles. You kind of know what to expect from each player. Radwańska was the standout player on the WTA Tour who would do things a little bit differently. Some nice words from Djokovic in press today, calling her a really smart player and one of the most entertaining to watch on the women's tour and in tennis in general, to be honest. I know Andy Murray's always had lots of good things to say about Radwańska. And obviously she's had some big results too. Wimbledon finalist and WTA finals winner.
Did she underachieve that? She didn't win a slam. Should she have won a slam?
I'm not sure. I think that game style she had took her a long way, but maybe in those big moments, if she came up against a Serena as she did in the Wimbledon final, she found herself a little bit short of power, perhaps in this era of women's tennis where power is important. And as you said, the six fan favourites in a row. I think she won six in a row, so she was very well liked. And just the other thing I would say about Radwańska is I remember a match at Wimbledon against Sybil Kova in 2016, and I had tickets for centre court that day, and I think Federer was on centre, and I just chose to watch Radwańska against Sybil Kova on court three, and there were multiple match points saved, and it was just fantastic. And I put out on Twitter earlier about asking for some people's memories, and that was a match that came up, and yeah, what a great player.
I think with her, what was special, and I can see why Andy Murray liked her, is because all of the spectacular shots, it never felt like they were for show. You know, you see some of these players, maybe someone like Monfils, and you're like, you didn't really need to hit that. With Radwańska, it was always for a purpose. You know, she hit the shot that she needed to hit, but it was very smart, very clever, and she'd be, you know, like a chess player, thinking like six, seven moves ahead. And that always struck me. And I think on the underachievement point, I think it's tough when you don't win cheap points in the same way that others do. Every match, you know, she would have to really earn it. And that's a big ask, isn't it, over the course of a Grand Slam.
What do you think, Andre? Did she underachieve, overachieve, or just about right in terms of what she got?
She was number two?
Yeah.
Two. Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic career.
Yeah.
The only thing I never understood when she worked together with Martina Navratilova. I thought that would be like a boom, like she could win more,
make all the difference.
And it didn't work out. It was a bad relationship somehow, because there was no success at all.
No.
And that is something I remember. But
I would have thought it would be like. We're talking about Zverev and Lendl. I would have thought it would have been the same thing, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's
exactly.
That's what's so interesting. And Andre, when you were talking about the Lendl-Zverev relationship, I was talking to David about this before. I think it will either be really good or it will be really terrible. Mm. But either way, it will be very entertaining to watch. But I can see them, either they click and it works, it's what Sasha needs, or they really rub each other up the wrong way and we see them splitting in a few months. I hope not.
Interesting, just on that, in his pre-tournament press, Zverev was asked when he expects to see results from Lendl, and he said he expects to see them next summer. So maybe, you know, obviously we want to see something instant.
You're saying I'm going to have to be patient?
Well, maybe.
we can't draw instant conclusions.
but it's never going to work on the tennis podcast.
But it was interesting that he did have quite an instant impact with Andy Murray. I remember there were, because I think Murray, did he win Brisbane straight away with?
He reached that semi-final of the Australian Open, didn't he? Had that epic
and
against,
very nearly beat Djokovic.
So maybe we've been expecting that from Zverev, and it's not quite happened yet. But it's been that slightly funny part of the season where it's the end of the season and players are maybe fatigued, so it'll be interesting. Personally, I'm going to take Zverev on his word, and I'm going to, as soon as Wimbledon comes around, I'm judging him. He needs to do well at Wimbledon next year.
Well, also on the second Murray spell as well, I mean, Murray had literally won Wimbledon a month after Lendl came in, didn't he? Because it was at Queens, and he won Queens,
well,
then went and won Wimbledon.
Yes.
So, you know, within 3 weeks.
Well, we're expecting a lot.
David, maybe 2 points came into my mind. Jess Green, the fitness coach of Murray, he's now in the Zverev team. And he knows Lendl. Lendl knows him. They have like there's a Florida connection, also with Zverev, because they used to practice, or they still practice in Tampa, Florida. Mm. So Lendl is totally in. He knows the father of Sasha quite well, and it seems they get along quite well. So it's a lot of points, and I don't think they would let somebody in their team unless it's not. It's not somebody who fits,
yes.
And I think Lendl fits.
Yeah. Very interesting. Final point, do you think, Andre, that Zverev is going to get through here and reach the semi-finals for the first time? He's going to be facing Isner, isn't he? There's all the mathematics that we might have to do, and we obviously have to see how tonight's match goes, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think he will. Last year he had the good chance to beat Pete Sock, and he somehow choked a bit, I'd say. And this time he played actually a terrible start of the match against Cilic, and he won the match. Nobody understood why, but he won in straight sets. And he played quite well the first set against Djokovic, so I'd say he will go into the semis first time.
Okay.
Andre, what's the German word for choke? Just out of interest.
There's none.
There isn't one. Because Germany never choke, right?
Great.
Okay. Just for teams that lose penalty
shootouts. There's probably Versagen. Versagen.
Okay, I promise I'm not going to Versagen next time I play Solihull Simon. Andre, it's been absolutely lovely to have you with
us
here on the Tennis Podcast. Matt and I will be back a little later after the evening session match, Cilic against Isner.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found.
LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We have a three-set match. It has happened, gentlemen. Matt, Grant Matt and Charlie Eccleshare are here, and it is 11 o'clock at night. The reason it's 11 o'clock at night is because Cilic and Isner went the distance. It saw Isner win the first set on a tiebreak. We then had the bizarre situation. Tell us about it, Matt, where, not surprisingly, Cilic held a lead in the second set and then lost the lead. But he eventually won the match.
He did, yes. It was a kind of fascinating look into where Cilic is at the moment, because he was actually finding it harder to hold his own serve than he was break Cilic's serve. And, you know, he broke Isner's serve three times in a row, which I'd love to know the last time someone did that. And I don't want to criticise the match too much, because we were crying out for this third set. It was, I think a lot of people thought this one might go the distance, and it kind of played out, I think, how a lot of people thought, except the fact that Cilic did manage to hold on to that lead eventually, which feels big for him. It's only his second ever win at the ATP Finals, and effectively, really, only his first, because the last time it was a dead rubber. He was already out, and Nishikori was already through, so... Yeah, a big win for Cilic, and it keeps him alive, because if he'd lost, he would have gone out.
I quite enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted, perhaps a little unfairly, it was the tennis gods' way of saying, careful what you wish for, as it kind of dragged into this third set. But it was perhaps better than that, and I think... there was the psychological intrigue with Cilic, just seeing him actually finally get over the line. And I feel like even if he... does lose to Djokovic, which he probably will, and exits the tournament, at least he's got a win under his belt. Just something to build on. Obviously Davis Cup still to come, but, you know, just something for next year, so it's not all bad memories at the end of the year.
We're all feeling for John Isner today. He had some very bad news in the last 24 hours, with news that his strength conditioning coach, I think from the past, a man called Carl Morgan, has died, and he left a really heart-wrenching Instagram post to John Isner last night, paying tribute to his friend, and it must be so difficult. At the same time, I mean, maybe it helps in a way to just get back to business and get out there, but I even thought at the start he looked a little emotional, and it must be really difficult.
Yeah, and I thought the same thing, and it seemed as though if he'd lost the first set easily, I think the match might well have just run away from him, because it must be really hard to lift yourself and to care enough when you've had something like that happen. So, yeah, no, credit to him for coming out and for really competing. And, yeah, I mean, shame for him he couldn't get the job done. I'm sure he would have desperately wanted to and to dedicate it to him. But, it was a great effort from him in the circumstances.
It means that Matt... Djokovic has qualified now, doesn't
That's
it?
That's right. Yep. Yep. That one. Yep. So Novak's through, and all the others can still go through. But Novak is definitely through. So maybe that will help Cilic, having, you know, Djokovic has a little less to play for.
That's interesting, isn't it?
It might not make a big difference. I mean, I'm sure Djokovic is going to be fully motivated to win that match, but just subconsciously he might be leaving a little bit in the tank, who knows.
It's funny, isn't it, because in football we have these, you know, third matches of a group, and you rest all your best players, or, you know, you give the kids a run out. There isn't really that equivalent.
You can't really do that.
I'm not going to hit forehands today. I'm going to give my serve a rest. So it'll be interesting to see how Djokovic approaches it. Maybe that slight dip in intensity would help Cilic, but then it's Novak Djokovic we're talking about, isn't it? It's hard to believe that once he gets out there, he won't want to win every point.
Mm. And he's playing so well. You could almost imagine him winning at 85% at the moment.
Yeah, and he did admit today that he was struggling a bit with what affected him in Paris. A bit of a cold. I noticed it actually in the build-up to the tournament when he was practicing here over the weekend. He was practicing with tissues, and he was coughing a little bit today, and he did say, actually, in press, that he didn't think it was a great match, sort of quality-wise.
No, he's quite dismissive of his own performance.
Yes, he rather shut down Annabelle Croft on the on-court interview. She said it was breathtaking. He said, I don't think it was breathtaking from either of us.
Must be hard for Zverev to hear that as well, mustn't it? You know, having just been beaten 4-1 to then hear, yeah, and I wasn't even playing very well.
Yeah, I mean, I must say that I know we don't use the words foregone conclusion on this podcast anymore.
For all long-term
tennis podcast listeners will know what I'm referring to, and any people who've come on board recently can have a look back in the archives for that one.
Sabine Lisicki and Serena Williams around the 2014 mark.
Yes. Yeah. But Djokovic is getting to that territory, isn't he, based purely on the eye test, really, what we've seen so far. He's just head and shoulders above everyone at the moment.
Yeah,
he reminds me a bit, you know, at school when you'd finish your exams and for like a few days you'd have this period of just, you
feels
know,
like a long time ago, Charlie.
I know exactly what you mean.
Didn't have a care in the world, you know. You'd done all your revision, you could just go out and enjoy yourself. He looks as though he's on court in the most part just so relaxed. It's like everything's now just fine. You know, he's been through the hard time and now it's just good again and he's winning every match.
I know, he does look so at ease. And somebody was mentioning to me earlier, he's also filled out again.
Yeah.
Remember how skinny he went.
Well, and Vida apparently told him he had to do that. Mm. He had to start changing his diet because he had gone really extreme and he really had lost a lot of weight. No muscle on him.
Yeah.
And apparently Vida said, you know, it's a mano sport. You know, you've got to toughen up. And he has done.
Order of play tomorrow is Dominic Thiem against Kei Nishikori Thursday at 2:00 in the singles. That one follows. Jamie Murray's also got a dead rubber from his perspective because he and Bruno Suarez have already qualified. They're up against Henri Kontinen and John Peers, the alternate pair.
Who've won it the last 2 years, weren't it?
Yeah. Hmm. That's right. Who have they replaced? Can't remember.
That's Mektić and Payer.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Right, okay. So that's Thiem and Nishikori. Then in the evening session, it's Cabal and Farah against Klaas and Venus. And the 8 p.m. singles match is Federer against Anderson. What do we think? Who's going to win those two singles matches?
Well, I think the Thiem Nishikori is a really, really hard one to call, but I would go Nishikori. And then I think
he won one game in his previous
match. Yeah, he's got a rich vein of form coming into it. I think he can't be as bad as that again. And so I'll go with him. And then I think Federer will be Anderson. I think Federer will be really pumped up for that one. And he's taken a day off again, you know, to recharge and refresh. And yeah, I think he'll just have enough.
What do you think, Matt? 3-1 is the head-to-head Nishikori.
Yeah, and they played recently, didn't they, in Vienna, and yes. Nishikori took him apart.
That's a bit mean, isn't it, in the bloke's home country?
I know, yeah.
6-3, 6-4.
Yeah, that is harsh. But he's not shown anything like that form this week. In fact, I think Thiem actually, I thought, was okay against Anderson. So,
second set, he was excellent.
Yeah, yeah. I'll go Thiem.
Okay.
And I agree with Charlie. I think Federer in the evening, as well as Anderson's played, and he really has played well. I think we could be at a stage where Anderson is pretty much through and Federer pretty, you know, I think he will up his game for that. And having seen him against Thiem, I'm thinking Nishikori was maybe just a bit of a blip and he's over that now. But
I'm going Nishikori. So Nishikori is my pick, Matt, so I completely disagree with you.
And in the evening?
And in the evening session, I'm going to go for Federer. Okay, yeah, I'll go for Federer. Something to do with 20 Grand Slams. And the head-to-head overall. Then on Friday, we've got Alexander Zverev against John Isner. Have you given us your Federer-Anderson yet?
Yeah. I've gone Federer.
No, you've gone Federer.
Emphatically Federer. Yeah.
All right. Okay, then Friday, we've got Marac and Pavic against Kubot and Mello, and Zverev against Isner. And in the evening session, it's Brian and Sock against Herbert and Mahu.
That should be good.
Mm.
And then we've got Djokovic against Cilic. So, what do you think about Zverev against Isner? Who is coming through that group?
Well, that was
Djokovic.
That was the Miami final, wasn't it, of this year? Mm. And that was a good match.
One Zverev probably should have won.
Yeah, I think Zverev might do it.
I would go along. I think Zverev will win that. Mm. I think he'll just have enough.
And therefore, knock out. And do you think Djokovic will still take
yeah,
action?
I still think Djokovic will win that match.
So Zverev will go through. All right, fine. Just to finish off, we've got to get up early in the morning, haven't we, Charlie? Mm. Because the ATP have announced that they are going to have, I guess, some sort of launch event and a press conference with Tennis Australia's Craig Tiley and some players from the ATP Player Council to announce the ATP Team Cup.
Is that what it is? Yeah.
The one that's going to be starting at the very end of 2019. So at about the
beginning of 2020.
I think it straddles the two. I think it's
possibly
due to start at about 27th of December,
right,
or something like that. Well, we'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah,
so what will we find out tomorrow, do we think? I mean, it's going to be interesting, isn't it, to see whether they take questions on it. And because, you know, there's all this chat about, was it Djokovic said today that this is really an unsatisfactory situation, that you could end up with two average, that was his word, average team events, the World Team Cup and the Davis Cup Finals, in the space of 5 weeks. And it's really not ideal.
I think what is going to happen is both organisations are going to steam ahead with their competitions. That will happen for a couple of years. Both will realise that it's unworkable and that you can't have those two. And then hopefully they'll get around the table and actually do a hybrid competition, which I think is what everyone wants, you know, with all the parties involved to make one super competition. But I think tomorrow we're going to hear that it's full steam ahead on both competitions. So we are going to have a situation where you have a Davis Cup in November, and then a month or so later, you have the World Team Cup.
And we have been in this position before. Funny enough, Yevgeny Kafelnikov, who became very vocal on social media this afternoon, mostly because of me, getting into an argument with him, he referenced the Grand Slam Cup. He was criticising Zverev's moaning. He was saying, stop moaning about the length of the season. You know, we used to finish on the 10th of December when we were playing the Grand Slam Cup, as it used to be. And that was an ITF invention, really. And it used to run after what was this tournament. And eventually they realised this is ridiculous and they combined the two. So I agree. I mean, I just cannot see how any rational mind cannot ultimately want that as the conclusion. I think both parties do. I think all the parties do. It's just that they're not going to give it up without a good hardball negotiation.
Yeah, I think I think the ATP would feel there's been a lot of stubbornness from certain stakeholders in the sport, you know, an unwillingness to show the flexibility that I think is needed. Parties, that they are going to have to compromise. It's the only way there's going to be an effective tournament. But yeah, we'll hear more tomorrow. It'll be very interesting.
It's going to be, isn't it?
Yeah, and Novak Djokovic also used the word unsustainable today, didn't he? So clearly he does agree with that. But he has said in the past, hasn't he, that he would, if there were two, he would play the ATP one, which I don't think a lot of people, well, maybe they did expect him to say, because of his position on the ATP Council and the ATP points.
Kevin Anderson said the same thing as well.
Right, so
God, dear.
What a mess.
It is a mess. Anyway, let's hope it all gets worked out. I said that last night. And we're going to be back tomorrow. We'll tell you what happened at this launch event. Also, folks, I've only gone and got Sue Barker to come on. She says she's coming on. Whether she actually agrees when she sees it in the flesh and that we're actually going to ask these sort of questions that we do, we'll find out. But she says she'll come on. She's lovely, Sue. Anyway, as is Grad Matt, as is Charlie Eccleshare, thank you for your company, gentlemen. We've been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with SSSTennisBalls.com. And who am I forgetting?
Melanie Bowes.
Melanie Bowes. Sorry, Melanie. we've also got our sponsors, La Manga Club, our mascot, Charlie the Ferret, and we'll be back tomorrow. See ya.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.